Good morning, members. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, this morning. I'm Lindy, the committee secretary of this committee. My role here in front of you is to facilitate the nomination of the acting chairperson. The chairperson of the committee has been booked off until the 27th. In terms of the parliamentary rules, I am required to facilitate the appointment of the acting chair. Members, I will call upon nominations for the acting chairperson. Are there any nominations? Honorable Masino?
Good morning and thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I nominate Honorable Louis of the Committee, Honorable Penn Chair, that will be a key chairperson for the day.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further nominations? Okay, by show of hands, there aren't any. Is there any member who seconded the nomination of Honorable? Honorable Apostle? Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, you have been declared as the acting chairperson. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to you.
Morning to everyone. I think there is no need for introduction. I don't see new faces, not unless members feel strongly that we need introduction. But looking at the agenda of today, we have only one item, which is a briefing by South African Social Security Agency on service delivery model. And without wasting time, I think I would want to welcome all the department and SASA for being here. I want to welcome the Minister and Deputy Minister, the DG, the CEO from SASA, and the officials of SASA. I want to thank you for coming. I see also, I forgot his name, Mr. Jehovah. Thank you for coming. I'll start by going straight to the agenda without wasting any time. I think comments, we'll make comments after the presentation if there are any comments and questions. And I would like to hand over now to the CEO. I've stopped saying DG Chair to myself now. I'm used. I just want to hand over to the CEO to do your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the committee, Minister, DG, and my colleagues. The purpose of us being here today is to put before you our service delivery model, and I hope that all the members have been provided with what we call our blue book with a house on it. I would like to walk us through the service delivery model and give emphasis to the words. I know it's a wordy document, and I think the most important thing to derive from our model is service delivery and how we do it. So, straight to the presentation. The content of our presentation will address, obviously, the strategic overview, the strategic objectives and values, strategic priorities, challenges, and then the actual service delivery model. And then speak to the implementation of the service delivery model and the application and operational processes, the structure to support the improved services and recommendations. When we look at the strategic overview, there we go. We will see, as we always have, our mandate, the vision of SASA, which is a comprehensive social security service that assists people to be self-reliant and supporting those in need. We see our mission reiterated to manage quality social security services effectively and efficiently to eligible and potential beneficiaries. And then our strategic objectives and our values. I think the important part of our values is that we seek to build social cohesion, we operate in a transparent fashion, equity, integrity, and confidentiality are cornerstones, but the most important part is our customer care, because we deal with beneficiaries. Our strategic priorities, as stated in our annual report and all our strategic plans, is customer care-centered benefits administration and management system, improved organizational capacity, and increased access to social security services. We have been faced with challenges, and I've listed the challenges. In order for us to address our service delivery improvement, we have to really be conscious of what has SASA been confronted with. Lack of uniformity, lack of standardization in its processes, overcrowding sleepovers at service points, long waiting periods for services, repeat visits by clients, backlogs in the processing, a lack of adequate office accommodation, significant growth in beneficiary numbers, a lack of automation and inadequate staffing, unsuitable pay point environment and poor records management, the lack of systems resulting in increased risk to fraud and corruption. The service delivery model therefore seeks to address these challenges, and I will take us straight into the content of the service delivery model. And we're on page 12 for those who are following the actual presentation. The device, because there have been service delivery models within SASA before, and this called for a revised service delivery model. And I think the important principles of the service delivery model becomes clearer, that the document is strategic and easy to read and understand. The service delivery model is concise. It is supported by detailed service delivery toolkits, and we'll see why that is necessary as we go along. And the service delivery model focuses on social assistance at this stage. Our health, as we like to refer to it. This is a graphic representation of the processes, and you will see a social assistance administration, the orange part of our blue hub, the application, the enrollment, the issue of a SASA card, which is really an anchor for the future, benefits transfer, then the maintenance once a person is in payment, decision review processes, which this committee was part of, particularly the redetermination process that was enacted last year in September, strategic framework, the management framework, and the support framework are the structures that hold up essentially this model, and then how we implement, and you'll see the toolkits are right at the bottom, because we say that at the bottom where the toolkit is, that's where the work essentially is happening, and we'll speak to that. in terms of the management framework, the enabling management framework, which covers people, processes, and materials, is provided. The focus of this management framework is effective strategic planning, optimal organizational design, and here we're going to have to stand just a little bit to say that currently SASA has a staff establishment on 18,000, of which about 7,500 are in place, but it's only focusing on one element of the work, which is the applications process. As we move to an end-to-end solution, we have to constantly, in line with just good business practice, review the organogram and see if it's functionally accurate to address the delivery of our service. Good corporate governance. This is something we all strive for in the way we manage our process. We've come off the back of a bad audit, but we are in good audit territory, and that's very important. Continuous change management is important because the changing environment and the climate of our citizens out there means that SASA has to become more responsive, and I think this is part of the challenge. When the numbers grew as fast as they did and the customers became more mobile, SASA was not as flexible to be able to achieve being optimally at the point of entry where customers need it. If we look at integrated performance management, SASA is a stakeholder with many others. Home affairs, if you look at our role with DSC, social workers in terms of SRD, we have to integrate this internally and then also look at an integrated platform externally. Needs-based research and development, I think we haven't been that invested in research and development trends analysis as we should. I think we've centered our work more on forecasting numbers. We need to understand the beneficiary. This is more important that we could give more focus there. Stakeholder management, our stakeholders are not just the people we serve or people we work with to serve, but they're also the civic society stakeholders. We need to recognize the role in communities of structures that we are setting about currently in our approach in development of facilitating community involvement in the service delivery plan, and that's across the broader social development family. And then obviously comprehensive ongoing monitoring and evaluation. I must say previously that was thought to be purely with DSD as the central provider of mandate and resources, but SASA within itself also needs to focus on M&E on its own work, and so we'd have to look how to accommodate that in future. The support framework speaks to the key principles, ensuring a business-driven approach within organizational norms and standards. I think it's important to have a norm for how long will it take for an application to be taken on in an office. When the customer or the beneficiary walks in through the door, they should be able to see the process. It should be an open process that people can see. When you come to the first desk, there's a meet and greet person. This is a change from the security personnel that met you. But a SASA, I call that Mr. and Mrs. SASA. Mr. and Mrs. SASA should be there to meet you. So that would really say to you, if you go through this process, it should take 15 minutes to this desk and that desk and out through the door. The 1021, which is the final product where you could actually then say there's approval and issue a letter, this is how long it will take. Modern technology makes it easier for us to improve our business processes, and we should see how to use that. The Social Assistance Administration Principle looks at the heart of the organization for us is when there's a citizen at the door coming to apply for a grant. So the customer service staff really have to ensure that at that time, as we approach, until the benefit is to put in payment and whether it is terminated as a result of a temporary nature, the person dies, it's an end-to-end service that requires good customer care. The major components of our social assistance administration principles is obviously benefits administration and benefits transfer. That's the payment where we physically pay it after takeoff. The inter- integrated end-to-end processes supported by interfaces of external databases for verification. By this we mean our ability to tap into Home Affairs, to GEF, which is the Government Employees Pension Fund, SARS. This is very important in the future. The minute we get your ID number, we should be able to cross-reference your ID against all government benefit systems. And I think that's the heart of comprehensive social security, the ability within one place to be able to check, are you on any government transfer at this time? In future, it would be even, I think we would be more efficient and effective if you were a victim of a road accident, if you were just to be able to tap on a wide range of government systems that support our communities. Grants are always under review, and I know this has been sometimes created hardships and difficulties, even with my minister, about the review process. It's cumbersome. When you ask an 80-year-old who's bedridden to come and show themselves, this is the difficulty. And we would have to understand as an administration to be compliant, but to be compliant within the framework of the people we work with. They are frail, they are elderly, so we need to look at how to do that in the future, and I'll speak more to that as I continue the presentation. So as well as give effect to internal review processes when a person has been rejected. But it's not just to say due reviews, it's to understand why the officials have made a mistake if it is overturned. The effective management of complaints and queries. I know I sit here sometimes waiting for meetings like these, and I hear people phoning and saying, I'm struggling to get hold of someone. So that means that the customer care service center will have to be a lot more effective in the way. Automated calls, response time for calls, so if a phone rings for five times, it should be answered. And those would be the norms that this service delivery model will address in the future. Holistic quality assurance of implementation and policies and procedures. Sometimes we forget that our workers are junior workers a lot of the time. Some of them are contract workers. We need to engage our workers because they tend to make mistakes, and we need to say, how can we eliminate that? The changes in benefits administration, automated business processes. That means an inbuilt performance measures and control to reduce risk. If you have a good system which immediately picks up that this ID is not just locked with ourselves but also with government employee pension funds, you automatically reduce the risk. So your system's improvement is by far the greatest thing. Screening is important. At the moment, I'm saying we should put better qualified staff at the front of the office. The manager can't just be sitting in the manager's office and allow lower level staff. The manager must be a visible person in the office structure, because that gives a sense of, we know what we're doing, we're here to correct mistakes on the floor when they happen, and we're here to empower our staff to do the job properly. Because it's in screening that we sometimes have the take-on processes. The wrong people get taken on. The reduction of paper forms. When I arrived at SASSA's application form, 20 pages long, it's just on six. Absolutely on six. We will wait for the auditor just to sanction the use thereof, and then we're going to put that in. Because we have to ask, why 20 pages? What more does it bring us? Can't we do it in less? And now we're going to do it in six pages. It's also to reduce, the climate issue, the trees, but just generally the storage of paper, big warehouses. Warehouses aren't my business. It's become my business. City Deep in Gauteng has become my business. Eastern Cape, the warehouse became my business, and there are challenges. Because SASSA staff, first of all, were not even really trained to operate a warehouse. They were preferably trained to run a small registry, but not a warehouse where you need to have protective clothing. You need to understand the boxes. We have men and women working for us, and there's lots of labor issues in how you manage a warehouse. So these are added things. When I think we moved, we didn't realize that big loads of files must be stored for X amount of time. And therefore, we need to go to automation, which I will speak to. scanning in documents. I think the Auditor General can speak volumes, and the DG wants to become the chairperson, so I'm saying this particularly for him. You know, when you open some of the files, you find one part of the page that you need. You find the 1021 that says the Grazi Parish, but you don't find the ID, or you don't find the supporting documents, because these files are those manila, large files, and sometimes our people that have been with us for years. So you have four files stacked into one, and sometimes they're not merged. So the auditor is looking for a name, comes across it, gets half of the information. Three files back, we could have taken the ID and put it in. So scanning in the documentation is the way forward for us, and that supports our service delivery model. Seamless integration of application reviews, customer support and payment, and obviously full compliance with all the necessary acts in terms of our own Social Assistance Act, the way we work the SASA Act, and various other acts of compliance of government. Benefit transfers, enrollments undertaken by SASA and done immediately, the grant has been approved. And this is important because whilst everything is fresh, that we have it put together in an ordered fashion. The card, our SASA card in the future, and this is the future, should be able to be used at a range of different places, but also should be used for seniors getting benefits. But these are going to be negotiations. Transport benefits should be able to, off the back of a SASA card. Services benefits should be possible off the back of a SASA card. So the SASA card must be something that we must educate our people very often along with their ID book, because these different role players, all pay, Impul, Weni, CPS, also have cards. But all of these are kept with the machinista at the moment, in lots of the cases. But if you educate our people the value of their ID and the value of their SASA card, because if you use it, you could get a reduction on transport. It is adding an incentive to them keeping their documents with them. And it's also a good response of the country to ensure that seniors get better deals because they are seniors in payment of social pension. But they should be able to be used. ATMs, points of sale devices, wherever prepaid, even the electricity. If there was a SASA card linked to a service benefit, because government makes service decisions for our people, said you get free this, basic service reductions. If you put in your SASA card alongside that, it should be automatic. So there is an opportunity as we go forward to further improve our service. Staggered payments. Now, lots of you would have heard that. I think it was the last place we had difficulty was in Limpopo, where our people came very early in the morning. You know, they were there at 4 a.m. in the morning. They were unhappy. They were in front of post office at one point. But they were complaining, and I am forced to listen to the complaints of our people because that will help me to deal with the changes we must make. And they were saying in certain places like banks, they get told you're making the bank look untidy. Now, where's the bank corporate social responsibility? The bank on the phone all the time saying to me, can you stagger these payments? Because on the third of the month, I have a clue that the queue snakes all the way up the main road. And I just find that very unacceptable. I find that we, the banks, should offer as part of their corporate social responsibility, understand their service to our people on that day. And they should come up with a business case to be able to enable the day to move smoothly. Rapid queue movement for those who are doing, banks do that. But yes, they complain. And so the staff come to me and say, can we stagger? And I say, no, I'm not changing things for our seniors now, because we will go through a change process once the new tender is in place. And it shouldn't be to satisfy the bank. It should be what is the most convenient for our people at all times. But with new applications, we will look at the spread of days in a better fashion when we do the re-enrollment process. Because all of, whether it's post office or the bank, they will continue to be stakeholders in the payment. We will look at further expanding our payment options, but they would still be there. So we will look at it, but we're not going to do it right now. So, Chairperson, if you do hear complaints about the banks, yes, I'm the person who said no, not now. Because you don't bring change about too many times in the life of a senior citizen. But we must also recommend to banks that they must understand that our person came from a far way to come to their bank in town. And they should respect just that as a principle. Reconciliation is part of the critical part that we have. And the next is a diagrammatic picture of the social assistance process. It just puts the customer, the beneficiary, at the heart of the processes. And then obviously it's circled by all the things I've been telling you, the enrollment, the application process, the ongoing management of it, the administration parts of it. It takes on the verification and review process. Now, the document would be useless to us if it's not implemented. So that little blue book, unless people feel it, this would just be a document. I call it File 13 until it lives and walks. So the implementation roadmap gives effect to the service delivery model. We've put our implementation in a short, medium, and long-term project range so we can give effect to it. And the key ones in the service delivery improvement for our model to work is the primary focus on local offices. And I have brought with me, Chair, and if you do want, because I know some members might want to know specifically where are things going to change. Is it going to be in their town? Because I know at the end you all are from constituencies. So I've brought a list of all the offices that will receive upgrades. Just to give you, the Western Cape will spend $3.1 million, and their kind of offices are Worcester, East River, Khayelitsha, Atlantis, Gauteng, Johannesburg local office, and I must say I've been there. It's overcrowded. It's the middle of town. There's a butcher underneath it. It smells like some certain animals died. Very bad form, that office. So that will. Mopanya Mall, we're almost done just installing furniture. Then that's a different approach. It's within a mall. Bronkhorstspruit and Heidelberg, Timber local office, Rotunda, Akisu. So we give you a whole spread. We're spending $5.2 million in housing on these offices. These are short-term. I've always not got to plan my time. I arrived in May. And the staff get very angry if I say everything's got to be happened by March, because they say you don't even give us a year. But I do want that some of these works can be done in the shortest time, because people have been waiting long. So we have a model. It's been signed off. It's based on Escort, and that's in KZN. That was a newish office, and it's based where people can walk in through the door. There's seating accommodation. Then there's a customer-friendly meet and greet person. There is then signage for each process in the application. And we can go on. Mpumalanga is getting $1.3 million. Northern Cape is getting $3.2 million. Free State, $2 million. Northwest, $1.7 million. And Dunisani, Eastern Cape, $4.6 million. KZN is getting $800,000. But there's a range of different options. Oh, no, that's Limpopo. Sorry. Wrong place. Ooh, might upset people from KZN. Giving them so little money. No, I don't mean that. It's the largest number of beneficiaries we have in KZN. So that's in terms of paying attention to our local offices. And I say, we're very welcome to give you the paperwork if you'd like. It's in your file. That just reminded me, we have put it in your file. Thank you. So in terms of improving infrastructure, I think infrastructure is not just about the building. Some of our staff have been unhappy with even where they work. So we have to attend to these issues. And we must make our work environment of a nature that our staff plus our beneficiaries feel comfortable. I know those two rooms, very small rooms with seven staff sitting in it, makes it difficult for people to even talk about their confidential issues. And a lot of the offices have been like, standardization of process, and I think this is very important. When I arrived at SASA, I went around to provinces. Some provinces took 7 steps to take an application, 6 steps to take an application, 3 steps. Every province had a different workflow. And we have spent quality time as a project looking at elements in standardization. What does that mean? It should be that when anybody comes into SASA, it doesn't matter where, KZN, Western Cape, Northwest, first of all, the look and feel. You must know that's the SASA. we need to represent ourselves. We need to have the name tags. We need to have the smart blouses and shirts. People should know where they're coming. But the process must be the same. And that's what standardization means to us. We have projects. I have about 15 projects running simultaneously from local office to standardization. The paperwork that they fill in, the process to disability management, these must be standardized. I think we've had the most difficulties with disability management. Doctors who are just churning out numbers for money, because we take contract doctors, Eastern Cape's the only place where we have doctors on staff, issues like that. Doctors who make people bend or pick up a pen and then start writing. I think those days are over for us, and we can't associate ourselves, this government, with that kind of thing. So we're auditing these doctors. Some of them doing like 60, 70 a day. And you wonder. I mean, I have a report that says the doctor is 1.5 minutes.
I'm sorry, Phil. You're not talking to DG. You're talking to members of parliament. I see you looking at ETG all the time. Please make sure that you're speaking to members of parliament. Thank you.
Yeah, I will.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, ma'am.
Yes, yes, please don't
say. Okay, maybe it's my line of sight, ma'am. I am looking through this end, so I'll avoid him and look through that way. I look at you all right, I will look at this side. Is that all right?
Yeah,
all right. The overcrowding is as a result of many things. The review process on top of an applications process, on top of just a wide range of people coming in. But it's also the lack of appropriate accommodation that leads to overcrowding. If we have better service delivery officers, there'll be better positioning for our staff and the people who come to our service. And also looking at how to position officers. I think at one point we were sharing a lot with DSD, and they've been wonderful. They've accommodated SASA, but I think we've outgrown the space. And I think we should have been honest about that. Rapid response teams give effect to the service delivery model. If, for example, we have an overload of staff in one office, sometimes this happens right down the road from us in Pretoria, where there's a lot of people queuing, there should be the deployment of a rapid response team. And this is what each province is working on now. They've been given numbers of staff. They'll have people who can go down to that particular office and help out. These aren't permanent staff for a particular, they're just extra staff, which we deploy in terms of our ICROP, which is the outreach program, but also to deal with where there's severe backlogs in an office. Automation, this is probably the critical key of where we need to go. The end-to-end solution. Right now, we have a SOC PEN system, which is a legacy system, but I do believe it's the most stable of our systems. SOC PEN is a system on which you load an application. The problem with SOC PEN, chairperson and members, has been that it's unable to deliver management information. So to address that, a subsystem evolved called IGAP, which I'm going to have to find another name for, but IGAP. And we piloted that in Tabanshu in the Free State, and we need to roll that out. In order to test a system, you cannot test it on one office. You need to test it on a province, because that will say, can it take the load? Is all the systems in place? Will the system go down if too many users come on? So that's called stress testing. It's what we will do before the end of this financial year. But an end-to-end solution means from take-on to payment operates off the same base system. At the moment, we have SOC PEN, IGAP, SUI is the other system, which is a single entry and live link. So we have lots of little systems, you know, and we need to have one system that takes people on, also for the integrity of the system, for the risk reduction. Obviously, systems, IT systems, are very expensive purchase. We will have the initial investigations will be starting in November, where we will test the small systems and see can they be staggered within an end-to-end solution, or do we do that from redo. We will even look at Oracle, which runs our administration. Could Oracle perhaps be the one system SASA uses for grants and its administration? But I'm unable to answer these questions. We require experts in this field to assist us with the spend. I know some departments have spent up to 1.6 billion rand on their systems and they still have difficulties. We are learning lessons from Home Affairs because we work closely, because we work on ID. So we are learning lessons from other departments, because I think if there are lessons, we're learning lessons from SARS, where they're all big players. We're also looking at international evidence of loading a lot of people onto one system. How will that manage? So we need to do some benchmarking. Because we'll have to come next year and say, this is the price tag for an end-to-end solution as we work towards that. Biometric enrollment. Now, biometric enrollment is a two-phase project. The first one is to reduce our internal risk. I want every worker who deals directly with a customer to have a biometric enrollment on our system. So the minute, you see, we used to operate on passwords. Now, when I look at the most risk and theft in our organization, someone takes someone else's password, enters the system, and commits the fraud. In my short time, I've had it in various provinces. The person says, no, I wasn't there. I was sick that day. It can't be me. I didn't do it. And you're depending on the identification of the worker who committed the fraud, because it's a password. You know, people do this with passwords. I'm sure lots of you have computers. You write it, and you stick it under the computer so you don't forget it. You know, that three times to drive, and you have to get someone to come and help you. And people look around in drawers, your cat's name, surname backwards, whatever people use. Passwords aren't the best way. But a biometric entry into the system by the workers will be your fingerprint before you log on. That says you are there. Because no one else is, we hope not, has the imprint of your fingerprint. So we want all our online staff, everybody at the front door, who serves a person, to be biometrically in our system. So every staffer, before they, when they switch on their system, they put their fingerprint down, and we know Jack Frost is on system now. If anything happens, I'll be able to go to that person, which I haven't been able to do. Biometrics also means that all the beneficiaries will have biometric detail, and we've already bought server space in anticipation for our new tender process, which will conclude, and whoever gets to come in of these role players, we will re-enroll everybody, including those in banks. It will be logistics issues for us, but we have to do that, because we need to have the integrity of our current database on beneficiaries. So that means we will take, and there was this engagement, should you do it by testing the eye as opposed to the fingers? Should it be the index finger? Should it be 10 fingers? I mean, this team knows. And we have 10 fingers now. 10 fingers, lots of storage space, having to be bought in CETA to ensure that we can store all the 15 million benefits linked to people naturally, their biometric data. So this is quite, because you must also remember that Home Affairs also now does biometric data. Mm. So we are talking to each other all the time to actually see how we can leverage off different systems the government has made. For us, it will be to get the little devices so that you click on your finger, it shows up, you're in. Those are the things we'll do. And obviously that whole fingerprint stuff, there'll be a desk for it in the office, so we have to make provision for all these things to happen. The storage is the most important thing, so we will be storing with data. The payment tender, which is a very critical issue, is online, running according to the time frame. It will be the last payment tender that is awarded external of SASSA. In terms of, this is the last time some other people will pay out on our behalf. We do hope the process will be embarked upon in the new financial year. Decisions obviously will be known during this financial year. There are three committees supporting this in terms of our transparency of processes and compliance with good governance and supply chain management. We had a technical process. We had a bid evaluation process, and we'll have a bid adjudication process. We're at the point of finalizing the bid evaluation process. and the ultimate signatories. And I can look at him, Chairperson, PG, myself as a PG, our treasury, need to sign off on it. That's okay with you. So this is important. I think there has been a cost reduction, particularly last year, on the current payment. And the fact that we've put in a 1650 as the ceiling for what we pay for transactional costs to pay a pension. This brings you down from more than 30 to 30 rand per transactional cost to 1650. This in itself the next 5 years is a huge saving for government. But as I say, Minister will obviously let us know at the end of this process, she will make it public how that has panned out. The new payment model, because in order to do all the things that this blue book demands of us, the new payment model, there's some principles in the new payment model. The new payment model has to understand its customers. It has to understand that we have customers who are in rural areas. It has to understand that some customers pay 150 rand to get to a pay point or to town, to a VAT. It has to reduce the cost to the beneficiary. Their amount of money is 1,140 that they get. They must get that. They must not be spending on the first day because our people are struggling the amount of money to actually get to the place. So that does mean in our payment model, which will be a head office district model with some community-based payments, I'm going to put it like that for now, ATM, points of sale, our new model has to include all these things, banks, SACO, all of that needs to be in the options to payment. But the whole point is to recognize that there would be cash payments for our people who are far away and that we cannot use the hill anymore in between the cow dung to pay other people. It's just not right. We have to address that. So we'll be looking, and there'll be an advisory committee appointed by Minister in the last quarter of this financial year. There'll be some benchmarking exercises, and then we will start working in earnest towards that. Clean audit, well, I've said to everybody, and I think people must really take me seriously, Minister can fire me if DG is qualified next year. Because while SASA was not qualified, DSD was qualified for the what they call the big money. I've learned the word small money, big money. The small money is our administration budget of 6 billion. The big money is the almost 100. billion. And that's where the auditor, I must say we made large impact in that already, which was evident this year, from the billions that were not tracked and traced the files last year, down to where we are, which was 800 million this year. I think the improvement will be evidenced by a better understanding of the data warehouse, of where the files are kept, checking that the files, and I'll be using EPWP, the Expanded Public Works Program, young people to assist us in getting those files sorted out. The file hasn't got the birth certificate, we're going to have to get the birth certificate because it could be in the pile of called loose correspondence. These things have to be sorted out because these were the things that were raised. The improved financial management and governance, everybody knows that SASA, part of its qualification was going from cash basis to accrual accounting, and then go into a system called Oracle. Now, while SASA was tardy in getting there, then they tried to get there in a rush in 1 year. Organizations generally take 3 years to change two things in the way it was done. And the systems, the modalities of the system have just finally been put in place. I believe with the transfer of skills with the E&Y team, we'll be better placed in our administration, and obviously the appointment of the CFO. So I think we're moving towards that with speed. Standardization of administration, the reviews of application and the review forms. I've said already we've worked on the actual forms. The reviews, I think we must really be able to say some people we should go to their home. A minister's very keen. We're looking at the age like 80, 75-year-olds, you know, what conditions. Some people have proxies who come to fetch their pensions. I would say, in that case, automatically we must go to your home. Because if you're already having someone come fetch your money, that means you're struggling to get to us. So why are we making you be taken out of bed to bring you to our very full office?
Mm.
So we've already started. We're also working through service clubs for the elderly, working with DSD on identifying places where elderly gather. We will also be using our vans, all of our 40 vans, to assist us in the process of the review process. So we'll put them alongside and say, today we'll announce, if you have your review letter, come here, we'll do it here, because it's a one-stop business then. We only have 40 trucks. They're not really enough for the kind of work I envisage, but we will work with that to give effect. And we also have smaller ones, and in future, if we do buy mobiles, they will be smaller. But reviews need to be done differently. If we co-locate with the health system and someone comes for their medicines to the hospital, that means they're there. We should be able to have an office alongside our hospitals or even within our hospitals. This is something we will have to speak to DG Health together with DG Social Development to try and see the co-location. This is also to improve our disability management. The four-step process, I said earlier, there was anywhere you could take 7 steps, 3 steps, 5 steps, 6 steps to apply for a grant. We have a 4-step manual process as part of the standardization. It says very clearly there'll be a screening, a testing, quality assurance, verification, front and back end by customer care. That's it. If you've been through these hands, you will have your application. If you're successful, that's how it works. It improves quality. I've already spoken about biometrics. Document warehouse. We must say, is the future of SASSA not to have these warehouses? Because if we automate, then our files will be electronic. And then we would just have to buy more storage space with CETA. And that's where we're going to. So as we phase out, I said to the staff, we could look at the 5 to 7 year phase out of warehouses. We need, because you see there's also archiving act of how long you keep a file and how long the auditor needs you to keep a file, and if there's debt on it since 2005, you have to keep the file. We need to get to electronic records management, and that is our aim. So we're going to phase out over the next 7 years. I'm only looking for contracted space. We might have to have a little space that we keep some of the files because they're open for various investigations. But we cannot run warehouses the way we're doing now, and that's what we're going to do. Flexi time. I think the staff with Minister during October have learned the word flexi time well enough. But flexi time is early risers. That means the office can open from 6 in the morning, and those staffers will go home earlier, depending on the impact on the office, and some of them could work till 6. So we're looking at that kind of arrangement. We obviously will not do that in every office, in every town, because it's not the same. In some towns, particularly the farming towns, people come to town on a Saturday. That means that office has to be open on a Saturday. So we are doing the REMs, these are regional managers, are looking at the content of their province so that we can work out, okay, this one will be the early risers, because people come here on their way to help their parents before they go to work, to bring them to our office and sort things out. Some come later. Some want to come on a Saturday because of how they work, particularly because we do know that some farm workers should be on our system and they're not now, particularly their children. So that's flexing down. The efficient and effective services, document management that we keep talking about, it's a medium, obviously, to the virtual storage. Strengthening customer care processes, meet and greet, that's what that means. Virtual training center, I think this is my something that made me very happy again yesterday. The ability to speak to your staff when a thing happens, no matter where they are, must be the greatest thing. DG is very familiar with the concept of virtual training. Yesterday, we were starting to work towards the finalization and going out to finalize our tender for virtual training. That means SASSA training is a very in-house thing. You can train supervisory management. You can get anybody to do that. But to train off this book, you need to do it in-house. You need the senior staff who are sitting here to go in front of a screen and talk to 3,000 workers in one go and say, this is what we've picked up today. This anomaly in the take-on process. and the grant was in process and therefore it became a review. This is what we don't want to do. Just to teach etiquette in dealing with customer care, to teach leadership management. When our virtual training center, we're thinking of buying us to license it for 50, which is taking into account our districts. And we could then say, if you look at the travel cost to bring your workers for training, they have to leave the office for a day. They have to travel through, if you live in DR and you have to travel to Kimberley, you have to leave the office. You have to get in a car. You have to travel to the regional office. You spend the entire day there. Sometimes it takes leaving early the day before and then leaving the next morning. You lose 3 days of work to come for 1 day of training. Virtual training means that we will book space 3:30 in the afternoon till 5 and say, we want staff from all these offices to gather at this office. It is a recording where we can engage directly. They can see. They can also put their hands up. They can ask questions. And it's an automated service. It's like a live link arrangement of training. We will hope to have ours ready by February and working. And so when we want to teach staff, because we have to teach them how to use the toolkit for the service delivery model, we'll be able to do it through the service. So we're very excited, Chairman, very excited about that. The improvement, I've already said, 300 pay points will be improved. Now, I must point out that our improvement, our infrastructure improvement plan comes with fraud, just with a little bit of difficulties. In the main, it's called public works. I always get worried when I look at ministry if I mention other departments. But, if we continue to work in this particular way, we might not achieve our outcomes. Our outcome is to try and fix 300 pay points and the number of local offices. That means you need contractors on site to actually give effect. In many instances, we also have to move the office because those two rooms are inadequate. Thank you, DSD. They are inadequate. We need to move to our own space. Public Works is our main service provider, but we have been talking of Plan A and Plan B and looking at what Plan A and B will be. Because if we don't do that, we might not achieve these outcomes. And our service delivery model hinges on us looking differently, making sure that lots of the pay points, broken doors, broken windows, the walls are crumbly. I always feel worried that an older person, the wall might fall on them because that's how crumbly. Then we also don't own those spaces. They're either owned by churches, civic society, traditional leaders, and we are looking at signing an MOU with Contralesa. We also have to deal with the auditor because they'll say, you are going to bring improvements onto someone else's claim. But you must remember that community spaces, because they are community spaces, we are using at a reduced price. And so it's far be it that we continue to leave it in this state. The toilets inevitably don't work. The JoJo with the water doesn't work. Our people sometimes have walked from far. These are issues we have to attend to, and this is what the 300 pay points will mean, the upgrade. And we do have a list available. I think it's in your pack. Direct single entry capture of information, biometric access for applications, scanning, we've talked about that. Most of these things I've already said. They are put out in medium, short-term and long-term kind of things. And I said SAP as a paymaster, multiple payment channels, built-in reconciliation. Now, this is very important. Sometimes reconciliation has not been done. Sometimes, like, for literally months. If you're able to pay and make the deduction in a bank today that your bank got less by 3,000 because you withdrew that, then SASA should be able to do that. It should be able to say, you can't go to another place because you got paid today. There was a couple, and I'm not sure where it was in Port Elizabeth. They said there was a robbery of a pay point.
KZN.
There was a robbery in a pay point. So they went to the newspaper and said, well, their money was stolen and I should be paying them through SASA. They grant money for that money. And we checked on the system. The wife got paid on another day. She was accompanying her husband, and they were trying to just take up another amount of money of us through that exercise. So there are systems that are working. They just need to work. But it took us long. It didn't take us. I couldn't say to the media when they put it in, I couldn't say immediately, within like 3 minutes, no, this is the situation. We had to trawl through the systems to get that information because we work from what's called a snapshot sometimes, and the information's 3 days old. It would have been so much better while that journalist was printing that story, we could have said, can we give you the correct information? The wife got paid 3 days ago. He was only there to get his money. As far as we're concerned, we didn't pay our two people today. Just the facts. I'm not disputing that there was a robbery. There was, but of the pay point. But people off the back. So it shows that with these kind of efficiencies, we'll be better placed. Implement the end-to-end solution. We said we've got 2014 to 2016 because we have the 5 years of the current contract, and that will give us the time. The next are just diagrammatic applications, the blue bar. So it just shows the process of application. The next page will give you the structure to support improved services, which you will see we have 9,937 pay points. So I'm not thinking if we do it at 300 a year, I'll be gone, and they wouldn't all be done. So I said to the staff, you're going to have to double that up for next year. But we're going to have to find a partner, because our staff aren't all entities and facilities, managers and understand engineering work, and those things. So we're going to have to find a partner if we want to achieve some of these outcomes. You know, our staff are trained to do what they do. We do have small components for facilities management, and we know those are taking on contracts. But some of these, we need to be sure if you're making an investment in a place that will stand, sometimes the buildings we are using aren't suitable. And so we should not invest. So that just gives you an understanding of the SACSA footprint. Chairperson, in short or long, that is our service delivery model and some of the improvements we plan to do to give effect to it. So I'd like to recommend that to you. And we hope that you would like to ask us questions that Minister Deedy and I and the staff would respond to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You are for a very, very comprehensive delivery model. At this stage, I would like to welcome Honorable Makakula, Honorable Kenya, and Honorable Baba, who joined us later. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Baba. I'm sure members have questions, concerns, and comments, and I would like to start by saying I feel concerns and comments. One of them is the, you spoke about the biometric enrollment, which is, I'm sure it's going to be costing, it will be costing, and I want to check whether you have a budget for that. And then the other one is around the minister recently was on Morning Live when she was explaining about Mashonisa and how they are going to deal with the issue of Mashonisa, and the delivery model is silent on issue of Mashonisa, and I would like you to tell us a bit about that. The other one, the rapid response team, whether you have those teams ready or employed by SASA, or you have a contract of these people, you know, around these provinces that will be able to respond immediately. Let me hold there. I'll make other comments later or questions. I would like to give members if there are any questions to be asked. Thank you very much. Honorable Masilo, can I take all the hands and then we will take all the questions and we'll get a response of all the questions at the same time? Honorable Masilo, Honorable Kopana, Honorable Mataba, Honorable Makuba. Yes, in that order. Thank you very much. Can you start?
Honorable Kamal Padula Stilo, and thanks very much for the presentation too. Thank you, Chair. And I'll protocol of that. The CEO, you mentioned standardization of the officials or staff, which is a very, very important point. In fact, it's in line with the Batupili principle in terms of the name tags. Previously, when I was with the NCOP, we acknowledged that the Department of Home Affairs and Department of Health are the ones who are holding to those Batupili principles on the name tags. So in terms of social development, SASA, officials and staff, they are not taking this seriously, and it's where they are working most with the communities down there. So if that can be implemented, we'll be very, very pleased as members. And also when we are doing a constituency work, we observe that the Department of Social Development and SASA in particular, they are not serious about the Batupili principle in that fact. The second one is the office space. I think in the Department of Public Works, there are a lot of buildings that are empty. And also, us as members of parliament, we could identify those buildings in our areas of constituency. If maybe the regional managers of SASA and the regional managers of public works can work together and identify those buildings, because I think SASA can utilize them by maintaining them, not even to pay rentals, but the maintenance of those offices, then it will assist the department or the staff to have more office space in our area. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kopan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, CEO, for your presentation. My comment is that, you know, sometimes you like to change your situation. You need to be honest about your weakness. So it shows that you are willing to change something. So I'm really happy to see that SASA have come up openly and show that the challenge that they are facing, and they are willing to do something. Every time, especially myself, I used to ask you, what is the plan of action to change the situation or the challenge that is always mentioned? So for the first time, SASA is coming up with a clear picture of how they are going to address the challenges. The other thing, according to the presentation, one of the things that I don't see the service delivery model addressing is the cross-border fraud investigation, because you once promised that you will be completed with the pilot. That was the end of October. And this is something that will continue every day. Maybe you can give us proper information. The other thing regarding SASA, it was the high turnover of staff turnover for SASA. Presently we are having about 60%, if I'm not mistaken, of the vacancy rate. So I don't see how are you going to address that, because you once said to us it's about 1,810 staff, supposed, especially the critical post that's supposed to be filled. So I don't see how are you going to address that. Most of the things that you have said today, we really agree that need to be changed. But the other thing, you need to be realistic in terms of the resources, especially budget. Are you having sufficient budget to address all what you mentioned this morning? Because if you don't have a financial backup, you won't be able to reach even those wonderful objectives that you wanted to say. My other is a compliment that I'm going to say. The last time there was a problem regarding the foreigners or the South African people who are receiving grants from overseas. My problem was first I was only relying on the hard copy that is provided to them. So there was no cross what is it? FASA was not able to cross-check with other departments whether that person is really almighty and or everything. But if maybe that can be in place, I would really appreciate, because that is what is facing us. Secondly, is regarding FASA changing or trying to understand that you should be more of a customer service, because the people that you are dealing with, they are vulnerable. Because really it's the person to go to FASA, even if you're not going to FASA. For the message, the security guy, security person with a gun facing you, the environment is not really conducive. So that is what I'm looking for. The last thing, I've always said that most of our budget of FASA goes to the contractor. So I'm happy to see that FASA is really looking forward to see the same master taking over. Because by so doing, most of our money will be benefiting the poor people, not those people who are the contractors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kopana. Honorable Kaba.
Honorable Chair, let me clarify this first. I'm 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. I'm in the class in Parliament. Sorry to be late because I found my minister and deputy minister being here. I don't want to be a person like that.
Don't worry, Honorable Kaba, you are known, you are very disciplined member of this Parliament. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. My Chair, first, maybe mine it will be out to relevant, but I feel to raise this thing because is a complaint lodged to my office, my constituent officer, by person who get grant from the SASA but using the APSA account. This person, he has been robbed 4,000 from the APSA bank. When this person get money went through to the APSA bank. There is someone that was stealing the money inside the bank. When this person go to the APSA, withdraw the money, they found the money out. When he go in the APSA bank, tell the APSA bank, hey, I don't have found my man. They tell him so many stories. I don't know what maybe SASA or managers of SASA help. Which kind they will give that person help? Because even me, I was not understand what was I doing. The way they come to my office and tell me about it. But I said to them, I will talk with the chairperson if there is no committee this week. Because if there is a committee this week, I need that help from the SASA. Please, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaba. It's a very, very good question. Because it's something that we come across with old people complaining about being robbed, you know. But when it's a payday, Minister, you find many people, I usually go and watch many people loitering around where the elderly people are. Maybe it's something that we need to negotiate with the bank, but I just want to add to what Honorable Kaba is asking. And I thought of my question now. I had forgotten about it. Honorable Amula is the only one who always, I know that she was going to ask about it. But I know that you've explained that you have about 40 trucks, and I'm sure you will be dividing or distributing these trucks according to the vastness of our provinces. But one time when we went to the one Eastern Cape, she complained about the maintenance of the trucks. How are you going to make sure that these trucks are being maintained? Thank you very much. I don't know if there's Honorable Makuba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would like to thank the CEO for the presentation that she has just given to us. I don't have questions, it's just comments. I think we all welcome the presentation and the service delivery model that SASA
is trying to put into place because of quite a number of things that have been mentioned by the CEO, which we also know, which are problems that we also encounter when we go to our constituencies, like the uniformity that you spoke about and the poor record management. Now I understand, because when you explain to that, sometimes one person has got more than one file, then it's quite a problem to actually get the information of that person at the same at the time you want to get whatever you want to get. And I just want to say that it really shows that you want to be an agency of social development that is people orientated, because you know, when I think about the flexi hours problem, we all know that we come from a Malokshin where my mom is one typical person. She refuses completely to go and get her money paid in the bank. She prefers to go to the pay point. And she wakes up in the morning to go there very early. You can try and say whatever you say to her, but she will go, you know. It doesn't matter. Yes. And, no, I really welcome the home visits point that was raised by the CEO. All in all, I just want to say I was also concerned that we can be able to achieve this and it will be for the benefit of our people. I was only concerned also about the office space, which I know has been a problem for Rusasa, and the one of the challenges that you mentioned, the inadequate staffing, and which has been mentioned by my colleagues already. But all in all, we welcome the presentation. Thank you.
Is that the last person? Oh, Honorable Kenny.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, CEO, for the presentation. I think some of my questions have been asked, but especially the tax issue, because we also were told that it is, they are so expensive to be maintained. That's why we are concerned about that question. Also, you were telling us about the 6 a.m. 6 p.m. Service delivery model, or in that service delivery model. But now I'm concerned, as we know, that our country has got a crime is rife. Then, now, do you think it is relevant for the 6 a.m. during winter? Yes, you can manage during the summer because it's not dark. But now I'm concerned about the season. During the 6 a.m. is too early. Now, for the employee and also for the beneficiary. So, now I'm concerned about the safety. What measures can we make to see that communities are safe, including the employees? We are talking about the virtual training there, which can start during the afternoon because of the workload. Now my question is the time frame. How long will it take? How many, so that it says that they are really competent enough. So I think that is all for me. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khan. I was reminded by the Secretary to give Minister and Deputy Minister time to make comments. Then I refused. I said I have my own style of work. I'm not going to do what the chair does, because I want them to do comments or any overview of what from the questions that the members are asking, rather than giving them before. They should know what we think, and then they can now make comments. So that's my style of work. Thank you very much, Secretary. Minister, I would like you to give you time, and also if you have something to say, Deputy Minister, to make few words. I'm sorry that I didn't give you before. It was deliberate. I wanted you to listen to the questions of the members and then make comments. Thank you very much, Minister or Deputy Minister. It is your time. And the DG after them. Thank you very much. People from the kitchen, I'm told that you are making a lot of noise. Can you? Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I think we welcome the comments and compliments that members of the committee have made the issue of Batupile. Mrs. Joyce, I agree with you, because for instance, in Mpumalanga, at the beginning of the year, we visited an area, and social workers were not wearing their tags, so we had a very good fight. And when we went back there last week, everyone was wearing a name tag with his photo or her photo, and I thought that it makes a big difference, and we're going to try and ensure that in all the provinces we accede to that. Because when people talk to you, they must be able to say, so and so serviced me. So that's very important for our people. But just to say that at least I know now that you can say to officials, I don't want this, or I want this, and you get what you want. For instance, the issues that have been raised here, it's issues that we spoke about, we've been speaking about for quite some time. And I think we also need to give some credit to the acting CEO, because he had already laid the basis,
yeah,
more especially on the finance side, because that was his strong side together with Rapache. And then I think we've already started moving. But for instance, one of the issues that I had said was that no disclaimer this year. And you know what happened when the AG went to various provinces. Some of the files did not have documentation, and the CEO was able to push very senior officials to say, if the file does not have an ID, you must find that person, go to the person, talk to them, take the ID and make a photocopy on your own. And that happened. People ran around, some were very exhausted, but a lot of work was done. But because I think there was determination, and I think we need to work on that and try and make our people understand that this is about our country. That is why at least we have what is it called? Yes, that is why we have a qualified audit. We have unqualified, yes. So I think we need to work harder and move towards that. There are two areas that the Auditor General worked on in as far as this, social development is concerned for the last financial year. They worked on NPOs, were trying to improve on that side, and they also worked on the files, and then the personnel in the department. And the improvements are helping us a lot. The new payment model, I think that is what we are very much committed to, because it's going to make a big difference, and we're going to make a huge savings. But I think one other thing is that what we've been using up until today is the old dispensation. We're using service providers that we got from various provinces. So now it's going to be, I think it's going to be something else, and we would have said what our needs are. Because when we raised some of the issues, there was a feeling that, but we made, we signed contracts with various provinces, and they did not ask for these things. And the way the issue of the ceiling, when it comes to the amount for administration, I thought maybe we should have gone down a little bit, because it was accepted and no one bought it, which means we are really moving forward. But what is also good is that after 5 years, we're going to have our own payment model, and we're going to try and appoint a number of people, more especially experts, so-called experts, and we might find ourselves also borrowing from other countries, because some of the countries are doing this on their own, but we'll be focusing solely on our own payment model. We will have people from the various sectors who will be saying that, oh, but you can't do this in South Africa, you can't do this in South Africa, but we want to improve the whole thing. With the issue of reviewers, last week, well, 2 weeks ago, we were in KZN, and then we visited a family with people that are mentally deranged. Mm-hmm. And I think our people cannot calculate. Sometimes they cannot calculate. They are mentally deranged, and the man said, when we asked, why are you not reviewing? That is why you are not going to get your pension. And he said, the one who removed my name is going to put it back. And if you go there as a social worker and suffer, it's easier, because you go, you help them to review. They don't have to go to the offices. Those are things that we have to try and instill in our people. As long as these things are done properly. 75-year-olds, I have been saying that we must start from 75 years. If you go there, you are also at least on a yearly basis able to assess the conditions of older persons or senior citizens where they stay. So you have other gains when you go to see the conditions. When you go to review, you look at other conditions at home. In as far as loan sharks are concerned, I think Selwyn will respond to that, Chairperson. But we have my predecessor had already started dealing with this matter, and what we found out is that there is legislation guiding credit companies. So what we want to do is to ensure that we have regulations that guard our people at the pension payout point. That's going to be our priority. And then the Department of Finance will be looking at how they deal with their own people, because they are flouting a lot of procedures, taking people's IDs, taking their cards, losing them, taking more than 50% interest. People get paid and they go straight to the loan shark. They give them money, and then they then end up giving them whatever they want to give to them. So these are all the issues that we would be looking at, but what we want to do is to ensure that look at the radius, because it's supposed to be 100 meters now. Maybe extend it and say we don't want anyone who's doing this and this and that in that area. But also, we need to work with the police on this. And also, when we find people in that situation, we've been saying that we need to deal with one case. We dropped one last year that was in KZN because we were not ready to deal with it, but we caught the person red-handed, and we're supposed to go to court and deal with the case, and I think we were not ready to take up the case. And then one other thing that Chairperson will try to do when it comes to the issues of reviews, we've been working together with SASA, and we've said that in December and January, we're not going to stop any pension, even if a person has not reviewed, because these are very busy months. But we are motivating people to review, but we're not going to stop their pensions, because that creates a havoc for all of us. I remember last year in December, Limpopo, a large number of people were complaining and all those things. So as part of dealing with that, we are going to that this is how we're going to deal with the matter. And maybe also one other issue that has been your concern. In the last MINMEC, we came up with a program of dealing with the reviews of foster care.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we're on top of the situation. And for instance, social workers had a conference in KwaZulu-Natal, and they had time to go to KwaZulu-Natal and help them deal with the backlog. And we've agreed on days that everyone in social development should be dealing, social workers, they must be dealing with foster care. And we think that's going to go a long way in changing the lives of our people. Public works, okay, it's fine. Let's work together and do that. The thing is, the offices that you are talking about are in rural areas. When the first week, when the CEO started at SAFA, she visited all the best and the worst offices. And in some of the areas, like in Northern Natal, there are young people that are working in the house of the magistrate. And we have to move out of that place. And there is no building around that area, which means that we have to quickly do something. It's a good that the magistrate offered us his house, but we are squeezing them. People come and queue at somebody's house because he thought work must go on. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, okay, that's that. Thank you very much about that. But on the issue of cross-border, 15 to 19 September, Social Development, SAPS, Home Affairs, Crime Intelligence, were in various border points. And there are a number of issues that we've come across. For instance, we're fighting with Home Affairs because these people have green ID books, barcoded.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out that they have dual citizenship. They have proper records. But when they went further at Home Affairs to look at what happened, you know, you remember when we allowed our people to have letters from leaders in various areas. That was affidavits. That is where we had a problem.
Mm.
So we are trying to deal with those problems. It's not only social development that is affected. Actually, we tried to tone down what we were saying on TV because there was already a process, a problem in Gauteng of people that were attacking xenophobic attacks, and we just said that occupying the houses of the poor, they're actually occupying RDP houses.
Mm-hmm.
They go there, stay for 2 days, collect the rent, and go back. And it's like it's well organized. It's crime.
Mm-hmm.
So we are together dealing with the matter, and we think we're going to be successful because we're working together. And one other thing is that SANDF is now in the borders, and we're trying to ensure that all the border gates are monitored. Staff turnover, 60%, but we have also agreed that this was at the beginning. I would call it a wish list, in lack of a better word. This is what we had thought we would need, the other 40%. Maybe we are going, it's only 10% that we are going to employ. It was just the figure and the ratio that was put there when SAFA was established. But we've looked thoroughly into the whole thing, and we think that we need to the posts that have never been there or that have never had warm bodies, we are going to try and cut them down and leave the ones that are realistic. And also we want to ensure that more people are at a grassroots level. And then you have a few people at a national level, yes, offices. I think we need to talk about it after this meeting. Take a particular, give them to the CEO and see what we can do. I think others, the trucks, where? Yeah, they are a big challenge all the time when the issue comes, my stomach just goes in. One other thing that we think is important is to have smaller cars. For instance, the report of UNICEF says there are 2 million children that have not been registered. So we want to try and register them. The farming areas where people can't register, we're trying to work in collaboration with agriculture so that we can go to those areas. And for those areas, you need a smaller car. So I think we're going to see, we have to see how we deal with the issue. And there are new methods that we can use that don't need a big satellite out of the car and all those things. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I'll now hand over to Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Minister has said almost everything, but I just want to, I'm not responding. I'm also indicating to some of the issues that were raised here. Like, for instance, the issue of Batupele. When you get to these pay points, people working for SASSA are really not serious. Thank you very much for raising it, Sis Uguti. We need to do something about it. And the cross-border thing, Minister has touched on that already. But to Umamu, is it Kopane or Kopane?
Kopane.
Not Kopane. Okay, Kopane. You raised the issue of the budget, and I'm very happy that you have raised it. But I want to say, everywhere, even in your house, even in my house, and in shops and everywhere, you can be how rich, but money is never enough. Never enough. But I want to encourage us to start somewhere. We must be able to say, yes, we don't have enough money. There'll never be enough budget for what we want to do, especially in social development. But we must start somewhere. Let's start somewhere and do something about the issue that we have raised, the issue of foreigners and Africans I think Africans who are receiving grants from overseas and in South Africa, in South Africa. Not only those that are receiving grants in our neighbor, from our neighboring countries, but also from overseas. We that's a huge investigation that needs to be done on that one. So that's why I'm saying money has never been enough. And sometimes on the issue about to be mom, I'll call her Dini, she knows why she's Dini. And I won't tell that joke. sometimes people don't understand the difference. They differentiate SASSA from social development. For instance, we've been in Matsulu, where somebody said the SASSA offices must be removed from that office. That office belongs to social development. Now, you find out that people don't understand what they are talking about. We need now to start to educate our people. What is SASSA? what is social development, what is NGA, all these agencies that belong to social development. We need to do that so that when our people start to complain, they know what they are talking about. We are starting to see a move towards the direction that seeks to correct what the members have been complaining about. All of us here, the buildings, the pay point areas, we are starting to see that move now. As we all know, that public works is another department, it's not our department, and the buildings belongs to public works. And we need to negotiate with public works to say, can you please give us this building? After he said yes, can you please maintain this building? And you know, when we're talking about public works, we are talking about another animal. So for us to get the buildings ready, we need, yes, we're talking about something else. Another big animal, it's so huge in provinces, in national, and so on. And I don't even know that they have a full data of all the buildings that they are having. So it's a huge thing. That's why I'm saying a big animal. Now, I'm also happy about the improvement of offices. And I'm happy, CEO, that there are time frames. When are you going to start and finish improving those offices? But on the offices that you have listed, I think those are for PayPal in different provinces. There are no time frames. Maybe you should improve a little bit on that one. On our SASA, this is something else now that I'm raising. No, it was raised by UCC Lapaya. Mama Kizi, she raised this issue of the banks. I think CEO, DG, and members, let's not look at the banks only. Let's also look at the pay points themselves and the people working there and say there must be an oath that must be signed by the people who are working for SASA. They must be able to have somewhere where they say, I, Maria Bongintuli, will work with all the people receiving grants with an understanding that they are old one, they are disabled, they are children, they are sick, and so on and so on. And if Mibanji were doing something that is wrong, I must be charged and released from my job. But we don't have that. We just hire people, they work as they please, they do corruption, and they go. So I think something strong should be done there. I also welcome the issue of electronic fingerprints. I think that will assist us a lot, because you know exactly who was using that machine at that particular time. I think the banks also must be forced to sign an agreement that they'll monitor their ATMs on the pay days, because that's where I think OCC chairperson who spoke about if there are many people who will be lingering around the queues on the pay days. So there must be some sort of monitoring on those particular days, and we must know which banks we are working with so that we can make follow-ups if there are problems and say this bank doesn't do its work. the cross-border thing, Minister has talked about it. It's a huge mess that we must deal with. People cross from Swaziland, come and get their money, visit their RDP houses, collect their rent, go back to Swaziland. They do the same in Zimbabwe, and they do the same, which one is Lesotho, they do the same, and Mozambique, they do the same. So that one is huge. And I don't know, we are looking at foreigners in particular, but we are not looking at our own people, because the houses, the RDP houses that are being leased to our people are the RDP houses that were sold by our own people, and South Africans. And if you sell your RDP house to a foreigner, the foreigner owns the RDP house, but in the list of the people who have got RDP houses is your name. And you can never apply for another RDP house, because you no longer qualify. You have an RDP house. So those are the things that we must look at. And social development alone, we cannot conquer that one. We need human settlement. We need the police. We need our intelligence. We need everybody to be on board. We need Home Affairs in particular to say, this one is not a South African. So there's a lot that still needs to be done. I'm just saying that I'm happy that at least the CEO started somewhere, and the acting CEO has also done a lot of work before this one comes in. With those short words, Chairperson, I would like to say, let's take it from here and work towards a particular goal of making a social development and SASSA an organization that you can rely on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. Don't look at me, DJ. You are going to summarize. There are a few questions maybe that the Minister needs that maybe they might not be answered. But one of them is whether we have budget for the implementation of biometric. And I don't know, maybe there are some. Thank you very much. Can you respond to those?
We have 113 million for ICT in this financial year. I think the processes are well on to way. Our aim is to, in fact, expend it on it's a little machine, a contact machine you get for, and also we will start the biometric enrollment of the beneficiaries in next year, but we will do biometrics for the staff in this year. And so we have that allocation. When I talk about needing big monies for ICT, it will be about an end-to-end solution. That is a large investment. But we will prepare a business case to go to Treasury next year. I did not bid this year because I felt that we first needed to have a very good scientific base from which to work and bid for it.
Mm.
The rapid response deployment team,
yes.
I have made 1,100 posts available, which will be filled on the 1st of December across the provinces. The aim is obviously to have better service delivery on the ground, but also each province will have at its district level office a rapid deployment team. We will obviously look at the how many numbers come to an office, where potentially we have, if we can do more reviews of life certificating in this place, we will look at the business case in order to deploy. But sometimes there's also disasters and things that require us to put more personnel in a particular area. We've just had that recently with Pittsburgh, where and Mr. Roberts is here, where you then have to send a few more staffers to an area to assist with assessments. So the rapid deployment team will be on staff. They will be available to wherever we have a problem. Just to say, the name tags, we will get our own with the pictures on, because we were using magnetic disc name tags, and then with only the name on, the workers lose it, they leave it on the clothes of the day before. There's a wide range of why they don't wear it every day. We will attach the salary number to it now. That means they will also have to have access with it. So there'll be a small picture. I just looked at the spec for it and signed it off, so SASA will have the picture, the number, not just the picture, the name and the number, and will also be used as an access. So we will have that. We're just going to, Minister spoke about the cost, the vacancies, just to say I've released those staffers, but there are also other areas of staff. We'll have 300 EPWP will assist us in the registries this year. We'll have 40 people coming in to the inspectorate, which is to assist with the cross-border work that has come out of the pilots that we conducted to go to other areas where there are borders. And the finance team will also receive more staff once we've done our business process re-engineering for that. So we're looking at about 1,500 staff being brought on in this financial year. And it is costed. I'm looking for where we have not said much. Deputy Minister spoke about there'll never be enough money, but we'll work within the money that we have, and we'll also make a business case to Treasury for things that we need to do and see how they do that. The apps that we will deal with. The 40 trucks are deployed in this format. For example, KZN has 7 trucks, because they have the most numbers. Free State has big trucks, but they also have small trucks. It's the future to get 4x4s, which are smaller. They're easier to manage. The issue of the trucks was also the bandwidth that you need for the mobility and accessibility to run the laptops within, and the cost thereof. So there's a lot of things associated. All the trucks will be serviced, because they need to be safe on the road. And we will be using it for the various projects of iCrop. We'll be using it for accessibility in terms of CSG to the rural areas. They will be using reviews. So there's a business case for the trucks being developed against how many kilometers they expected to do per month. That's how we'll cost the petrol and all those things. I think during austerity last year, there were problems, and therefore the trucks were grounded because of the bandwidth access. There was a sense to save money to pay the deficit. We will try and do that, but we also need the trucks. It's part of our work. Can't work without them. There was a sense that someone wanted to take on loan 2 of the trucks, but Treasury has been very clear. It is our asset. We need the asset. Other government departments, if they want things like that, they must go buy their own. We will utilize it, because we can if we plan it better. So we are planning a better. There was an investigation. I have the result of the investigation, but it's in the disciplinary processes at the moment around the trucks. Flexi time and weather, the winter. Our people, regardless of whether it's cold or warm, they come that time.
Oh, yes.
I worry that they're standing in the rain. I worry that we don't have sufficient coverage for them, but our people come at that time. And we as staff have the ability, obviously, to get them a car in a safer terrain. We will look at the safety of our staff. We also talk to unions before we start anything to negotiate the safety of our people. So we thank you for being concerned, ma'am, but we will also look at our people. We'll ask them from 4 a.m. in the morning, and we're trying to get them not to be there. But in some places, they are there, and we can't wish them away. I think the monitoring and evaluation is part of PayPoint management. We have to look at the project called PayPoints for the new payment contractor, because in the past, the ones that we have now, some payment contractors take care of the PayPoints, others don't. But we assess it our responsibility. We have norms and standards of distance, as Minister has said, and all we must do is implement the compliance. But the pay point is also a social event. It also drives local economic development. Besides the Machinista, which my colleague Solomon could talk about, the National Credit Regulator and stuff we've done around that, lots of old people enjoy the conversation at the pay point. We must manage it a bit better. And I don't think we can take away, in many instances, what the pay point has become in people's lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you have a follow-up of the question concerning the people that are coming from other countries to get money in South Africa? I just want to get the difference between refugees and illegal immigrants. Whether you do have, you know, or you meet the High Commissioner of EUN concerning refugees. I know in Zambia, and we're not getting grants, we're getting stipends from the ANC. But here, maybe it's different, that there are those that have illegal or legal. They get a grant legal because they are refugees. But I do not know the difference. When do they get the money legally in South Africa? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And good morning to members of the committee. Seeing that this is the first time that I'm opening my mouth, I should do that. Chairperson, there are at least three categories of persons we can talk about. The first being that of permanent residents. These are people who are not citizens but have applied for permanent residence in the country because they've stayed for a certain period of time. I think the minimum period is 5 years, and they've met the requirements, some of which would include the fact that they are gainfully employed, they can take care of themselves. What has happened with that category of people is that in, I think, 1996, there was an exception made for people who had run away from civil war in Mozambique coming into South Africa, who were granted permanent residence by proclamation by President Mandela, without them having to meet the minimum requirements of the Immigration Act, which means these are people who are not required to demonstrate that they are gainfully employed, they can maintain themselves, and that they're not going to be a burden on the state. By having granted them that exemption, it meant that the state effectively assumed the role of being a provider in the event that they're not able to provide for themselves. These are the people who actually were before court in the Mashava case that reversed the assignment of the social assistance function to the provinces that led to the formation of SASA. So that's one category. What that means, therefore, is that if a person has acquired permanent resident status, and maybe at the time of applying they were able to provide for themselves, once they cease to be in a position to provide for themselves for reasons of unemployment or whatever the case may be, to all intents and purposes, for purposes of social assistance, they are treated in the same way as South African citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about permanent residents now.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to refugees, there are two categories of people I'd like to talk about. The first is, when you come into the country, you are not a refugee. You are an asylum seeker. During which time, when we grant you asylum, we have to show that you come from a country that is, or you're running away from political persecution or from civil war and the like. And you come in as an asylum seeker who's applying for refugee status. Whilst you're waiting for your application for refugee status to be granted, you are classified as an asylum seeker. But in South Africa, the experience that people who come from outside the country have is different from the one you've referred to in Zambia, in Zimbabwe, elsewhere, where they were in fact what was then called refugee camps, where people would be kept in,
yes,
in refugee camps,
mm-hmm,
where they could be provided with specific assistance, be it by the UN system,
mm-hmm,
or in some instances even by liberation organizations. But in South Africa, we have a different policy. The policy is that of integration. Refugees don't stay in refugee camps. But in fact, you are integrated into South African society.
Mm.
What that means, therefore, is because people are not kept captive for targeted measures for them, they are expected to fend for themselves like any other South African. That's why you will have many of them finding jobs like any other South African, competing for those jobs and the like. When a person has been granted refugee status, to all intents and purposes, don't enjoy exactly the same rights as a citizen if they are unable to provide for themselves. We now have refugees who are disabled getting the disability grant. They qualify for social relief of distress if they can demonstrate that they are facing undue hardship. Not many of their children have taken the gap to apply for the child support grant, but there would be no reason why SASSA officials would turn them down legally if they applied for the child support grant, if they were able to demonstrate that the other don't have income, or if they do, such income is below the threshold of the next test.
Mm.
Because they, in fact, their status in the country is legal. It's legalized. But that stay here is only allowed until such time that conditions back home improve, in which event. In many instances, they are either granted the opportunity to decide, as we've done with the Angolans, for an example, whether they'd like to go back home because their country is now free, the civil war is over, or they'd like to stay on, especially people who've been here for more than 10 years. I suspect the same would happen with people from the DRC and several other places. But we have a unique category of people from, say, a country like Zimbabwe, where there's a mix of what may be regarded as people running away from political persecution. Whether it's real or not, it's not very clear at this point. But the other category is what has become colloquially referred to as economic refugees.
Yeah.
People who are running away from lack of opportunity back home, coming into South Africa, because there are those opportunities. But for those people, you will have seen the Department of Home Affairs over the last while saying people must apply for documentation, they must be documented and the like. It's to actually not grant the so-called economic refugee status, but to regularize people's presence in the Republic, to allow them to fend for themselves, to look for jobs, taking advantage of the space available for them through the protocol on free movement in the SADC, which allows people to be in South Africa for about 90 days without a visa. But they have to interrupt that period if they have to stay longer by going home and coming back. But they don't have to apply for a work permit. Now, those people, strictly speaking, do not qualify for any of the grants. They do not qualify for any of the grants. But then we have a pressing problem with regard to maybe the last category that you refer to, people who are in the country illegally.
Mm.
And I think that by extension might even go touch on some of the people I will refer to briefly. People who are in the country illegally, especially if they are of age, but for the fact that the state has to make sure that they are protected from harm, the state doesn't have responsibility to provide certain services to them, except children. There are international protocols that say children are almost like international citizens.
Mm.
Wherever children are, we have a responsibility to make sure that they are protected. Even if their parents are illegal in South Africa,
Oh, okay.
We have to protect them. We have to protect them. Whether such protection extends to them applying for the grant and so on is a matter that we are busy grappling with. We've been working with Home Affairs a few years ago on this project, trying to determine exactly how we're going to deal with children. Many of them are, in fact, unaccompanied. They can't be attached to any parent.
No.
And increasingly, many of those children are now being fostered by South Africans.
Yeah.
Because these are children of foreign nationals who don't have parents with them here. And because we have an obligation to provide assistance, we have to find, or good South Africans have to come to the fore to apply for foster parent status. And then we pay the foster care, the foster child cost. That's what is happening at the moment. Properly construed, our constitution is not dubbed one of the best in the world for the wrong reasons. I think it is, but it also does present very serious challenges.
Mm.
Because we have a limited fiscal space to provide the kind of assistance we have to make available to everyone. Now, as I said, I mean, not limiting ourselves only to the grants, but talking about social services broadly.
Mm.
The fact that the child is not South African or the parents are not South African, I can't imagine that the public hospital will say, although this child falls within the category of 0 to 6, that because they are a foreign national, they can't be assisted. That has never happened.
Mm-hmm.
That has never happened, and it probably will never happen. Whether they access non-fee-paying schools is something we still need to establish. At this point, I am not certain. Mr. Jehoma might be in the room. They do.
Yes.
They
do. Especially in the border.
In the border, cross-border areas.
Cross-border areas,
yes.
There are many children that are attending South African schools.
Indeed. So we in many ways, we live up to the letter of the UN Convention, despite the strain that it causes to the fiscal. But that's what the situation at the moment. I hope I've answered your question.
It's more than an answer. It's like a workshop. That's very good teaching. And I feel that maybe we will talk to the chairperson at some stage. We need to know this international as a committee, so that we are not embarrassed, you know, when we are asked these questions and you say, no, I do not know. Maybe we do need at some stage next year, whether some kind of a workshop, to talk about the international agreements, you know, to South Africa. More especially around issues of children and issues of social development. Thank you very much, Gigi. I don't know whether you want to say something, Gigi. Because that was a question, you might have something to say, just to round up. Okay. Oh, Mr. Jehoma, we are amongst the honorable members, so I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I suppose I should start with the minister. I start with the chair. Thanks, chairperson and members, minister, deputy minister, DG and colleagues. In brief, the issue of the loan sharks rose, as the minister has indicated, during the tenure of the previous minister, but the MINMEC course, or early part of this year, raised the issue very strongly about the major challenges being faced, and then tasked us with coming up with a strategic response to it. The department, working with SASA, drafted a response plan covering three areas, essentially because what is being done quite often constitutes illegal activities that falls within the purview of other departments and not within our own responsibilities. But what we felt as this department we could do was to embark on a process of education and see how even up to debt counseling could be introduced. And of course for this we required the National Credit Regulator. A second part of the strategy was to work with the National Credit Regulator to undertake investigations as well as prosecutions, and to get these to result into a high-profile arrest. That is what we felt was as far as what social development could do. MINMEC, in its wisdom, of course, asked us to revise that strategy and then proposed a three-pronged, or at least a three-pronged approach stretching over three periods of time, and if the chairperson and members would allow me, I can't go into the detail because MINMEC wants to have us present or represent the case that we have. But in the main, chairperson and members, it has to deal with an interdepartmental approach to get the other relevant departments like SAFS, the NPA, DTI, and Treasury involved, dealing with essentially the social economic and security clusters. In the short term, MINMEC also wants better policing, and I say in inverted commas policing, because it means SASA would have to have officials marshalling at pay points to be introduced immediately, but also that we work with COCTA. Over the medium term, we are being asked to look at the Sinamantla project that is seem to have been very effective in KwaZulu-Natal in particular, where beneficiaries have been able to extricate themselves from the grips of loan sharks, but that we also need to look in the medium term at other macro-social issues involving social mobilization, and then in the long term we are being asked to look at how we can explore issues around micro-lending, where reasonable interest rates would apply, but also how we can work with communities to empower themselves, replicating what has happened in Sinamandla. So those are it, but already as we started to explore these initiatives, our interaction with the National Credit Regulator has resulted in arrests already, and I suppose we've inspired some fervor in them that they have, in a sense, just gone out there and started investigations, arresting people, and they've been reporting to us, of course, working with SASA. It is beginning to raise some other issues, so the interdepartmental task team will convene shortly. But it is an issue that we believe that's going to be tackled with much more force and over much bigger area. One of the key things has been the fact that the police have not been knowledgeable that they can actually arrest people and produce, on the basis of evidence produced, such as what happened in the Western Cape, can get people jailed. As part of our collaboration, we are presenting to the security cluster, or JCPS, on the 3rd of November, and that will take us to a second phase of action in this regard. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you very much. DG, the reason why I want you to say something is that, if I'm not mistaken, we are seeing USASA for the last time this year as this committee, and we want your voice, DG. But I do want to say our chairperson has a very serious flu. I'm not happy that she's not here because she was going to say something because it's the last time that we're going to see USASA. But I have a feeling that the model that we have is talking to all the issues that when we went to Eastern Cape and Free State, identified by members, the question of, I remember in the Eastern Cape, Honorable Lamula was like, you know, screaming when we went to see the storage of the warehouse where the files are, you know, because it was so packed and there was no order there, Minister. And they promised us that there is a building which was being built, or they said they are going to move to that building. Next year we will be going again to check, you know, the filing system, if it's improved. But we do want to say, you've spoken to all the issues that the members were, you know, concerned about in most areas, like filing system, the staff. Yes, you know. But we do want to say, we see that they have time frames. But there's one thing that I know about us. We keep records. If you say on the 1st of December, we will be employing this much of staff, we'll come back to you and ask. Thank you very much. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be very brief. I'm not known for being brief, but I'm going to try this time. The service delivery model is not a facelift of offices and equipment. It's about transforming the overall beneficiary experience. And that's what SASA is offering the people of our country, predicated on the principles of Batupele and the more contemporary ideas on customer care. Internally, SASA is looking at the optimal organizational structure and the utilization of both the staff and acquisition of new equipment to make sure that we build efficiencies, we build in systems that are interoperable with systems of other government departments, which will deal with issues of fraud prevention and fraud detection capacity. May I say that this service delivery model is designed to turn SASA into a people-centered institution.
Mm-hmm.
And these are some of the compliments I've heard members of the committee shower at, or rather upon SASA. And changing that experience extends in the meantime to upgrading of our pay points, which is where a lot of activity is happening on days of payment. But with SASA positioning itself, in fact having set its foot down the path of being the payment provider, it does mean that increasingly more and more of our people will be dealt with through SASA providing what is called electronic payment. I'm not talking a banking solution, I'm talking electronic payment solution. And for those of our older people who utilize payment days as days of socialization, we are working on alternatives as the Department of Social Development, such as luncheon clubs and the like, so that people don't depend entirely on payment days for them to socialize, but that we can provide them with alternatives so that we don't take away the space of socialization, but at the same time still change the experience of how they access benefits from the state from the point of view of social assistance. Let me conclude by returning a compliment to the committee. I know one of the few meetings that SASA came to present to, I think it was the building just behind me, I made a request to members of the committee, which almost got me into trouble. I think we were talking about requesting members of parliament to help us ensure the integrity of the tender process. By not tampering with those processes by way of either asking questions while the processes are underway, I'd like to express our gratitude to members of the committee and maybe even the parties they belong to for having respected that up to now. If you could hold on just for a shorter time, because the processes are about to culminate, after which time we have no doubt you will ask us questions and we will be happy to respond to them. But I would like to just express our gratitude for having helped us secure the integrity of the process up to now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. The time now is 25 past 12. I would like to thank members of parliament. I don't know whether you want to say something, members. No, there's no hand. Okay.
For next page,
okay.
You request from the DG in particular for the diaries for the members of the committee. That's a compliment. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not going to comment on that. But let me thank all members of parliament for coming. And I would like also to thank USASA and all your officials for coming to us. DG, the minister, deputy minister, and the staff, thank you very much. And the meeting is adjourned.
Thank
you. Did you?
We need to get
that out.
You will get them.
Thank you. Yes, that's all. That's
all. What is the
meeting?
are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. I'm still recording. I pressed on the middle one, but it did not stop.
Did not stop in it?
Oh, it's still recording. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're supposed to switch it off.
Okay.
Yes, after saving it, you just switch it off. Yes.
Okay.